Hello and welcome to this episode of the Star Wars Universe Podcast. Friends, we are going to do something we haven't done in a long time. We are not going to focus this episode on Andor. There's so much other great Star Wars content out there, and there's a lot of new stuff coming up. Bad Batch, which we'll probably be covering fairly week to week, as well as The Mandalorian coming out and all sorts of stuff. But we've got this short little window in which I wanted to look at some other things, including a show that I have been told I should see for a long time, Star Wars Resistance. Well, I finally watched it. Aaron McGowan, the Ahsoka cosplayer and awesome guest who I had on a few weeks ago, watched it as well. And we're going to be talking about season one. All that more after a commercial break we have no control of, but I'm going to guess is a lot of ads telling you what you need to buy someone else for Christmas. Welcome back, friends, and I have a question. I want to know, how many times did you hear the tune of either Jingle Bells or Deck the Halls in those commercials you just heard? I'm guessing that I'm going to put the over-under at least one, because I think there's only two ads, but it might be higher. I'm sorry if we could have non-Christmas ads. I definitely would like it to happen, but either way, here we are. I'm Matthew Fox. I'm your host, and I'm joined, as I said, by Aaron McGowan. Aaron, how are we doing today?
Doing good, you know? Kind of a late night for me last night, so I was in a rush to get here on time. Other than that, doing pretty good.
Well, I totally appreciate that, especially after a long night. I'm really glad you could be here. And let's kind of just dive right in and ask, so Star Wars Resistance, what'd you think?
I was really pleasantly surprised. I'm going to be honest. One thing about me, I'm a bit of a hater of like the post-Empire era. Mm-hmm. Like, the prequel, or no, sequel trilogy was not really for me. Looking right back, I, like, have a lot more understanding and respect for people who do love it, and I see a lot of the good parts now that I've heard other people talk about it, but I think that was kind of why I didn't initially watch Resistance. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, it's not really a time period I'm that interested in. Meh. But, when you said we were going to record on it, I was like, okay, let's like give it a shot, you know? And the first few episodes, I was really pleasantly surprised. Like, it is a kid show. It is a cartoon show. But it still did have like some depth and just genuinely interesting stories. Like, my dad walked in while I was watching it. And then a while later, he was like, man, you're getting me sucked into like your TV show. It's so, like, even adults enjoy it, you know? I'm sorry.
Okay. No, it's okay. It's okay. I love having you as a guest. I love the enthusiasm and energy. I'm going to need a walker as we keep talking, but that's fine. That's fine. No, and I totally get it, though. I had some similar feelings about the sequels. I think Last Jedi is, until Andor, maybe my favorite piece of Star Wars media, but and I have a lot of complicated feelings on the sequels, but certainly I didn't have a huge rush of, oh, hey, like, give me more in that world. And I think also what I'd heard about it was that it was a little bit more childish, a little bit more young focused than even Clone Wars had been. And frankly, as much as I liked the prequels, as you and I have discussed a little bit, that was one of the things that turned me off about the prequels a little bit, is I felt like here you have some of the stories that I think are the most adult focused in terms of the nuance of Anakin's fall and the Republic's fall and the Jedi's fall. And it's being told in a way that's really aimed at more little kids. And I've come to really much better understand the prequels in a lot of ways. And so I wanted to kind of give Resistance the same sort of shot. And my experience of Resistance was basically, the show starts out by saying, hi, folks. Do you want to spend some time in a Star Wars world that is cozy? Where everyone is a little bit of a two-dimensional character, but don't worry, they're all friendly and fun, and the aliens are ridiculous, and it's going to be a little scary, but never really. Like, my partner, who was really into anime, came in and watched a couple episodes with me and went, oh, so this is an American version of a Japanese sports anime, where racing is the sport. I was like, okay, yeah, that's kind of fine with the spy thing in the background. And there's a good maybe 10 or 12 episodes that are about, like, will the team of, like, you know, racers who are willing to cut corners convince our hero to join with them? Or will the, you know, they get the special fuel or they fix the engine? And it's all, I don't know if I would have enjoyed it as much as I did if I wasn't coming off Andor. But after something that was like, you think you know who's a good guy? Nope. You think you know who's a bad guy? Nope. We're going to punch you in the face with complexity and nuance every day. Resistance was a really nice change of pace. And so I'm just watching this cozy show, and I'm watching this cozy show, and I'm watching coziness, and then all of a second it's like, oh, by the way, you've just spent the last six episodes watching some of your best friend characters become fascists. And you've done it in a way that you're a little bit sympathetic to them, and here's fascism, and here you've just learned how easily it is to be seduced by it, and oh, by the way, the person who you really most felt for, you're about to be emotionally devastated as his planet is destroyed. Have fun. I was just like, what did this show do? Because out of nowhere, I mean, not out of nowhere, it built slowly, but it wound up becoming this really interesting statement on, in the way, I've said 8 million things already, so I'm going to cut it off there, but it became this really interesting statement on, like, how the First Order could slowly come about, and how you can have a show that feels really lighthearted all of a sudden become very serious, very intense in a really good way.
Yeah, I was really kind of blindsided also by that.
Mm-hmm.
But it makes me really excited for season two. You know, like, it introduced us to the characters. It showed us their everyday life, the little trials and tribulations of pretending mm-hmm. you're a mechanic when you don't know anything about machines and trying to be a spy, but you're literally 20 years old, you know? Right. So, yeah, I really appreciated the way it, like, slowly built the drama, or like the seriousness of it, like you said. Mm-hmm.
For sure. One thing that I found that kind of turned me off about the sequels, although again, like I said, I'm not a hater of them. I do really enjoy some parts of them, and I really love Last Jedi, and I love Rey and Finn, but I thought the story of the attempt to rebuild a republic after an empire and deal with the fragility of that, in part because we've seen so often around the world situations that are used to dictators try to start having democracy and often fail because of how difficult it is. I thought that was such an interesting story. And then with the sequels, almost immediately said, okay, we're not going to actually tell you anything about that. We're just going to say, here's the First Order, here's this resistance thing, and now we're right back to where we started with the First Order is really in control and we're fighting against them. I was really disappointed because I wanted to know the story of how does the First Order come about. And I really enjoyed that. I feel like in the same way that for me, and this might be heresy, I realize, but in the same way that the Clone Wars kind of fill in a lot of the gaps of the prequels, this to me is kind of filling in the gaps of the sequels. You know, it's telling me, okay, how did the New Republic fail and how did the First Order come about?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I appreciated that. Like, the First Order kind of was the underdogs. They were almost like the, like, gang trying to, like, move in, you know? They were paying off the pirates to attack the Colossus more and more in order to, like, make their importance greater so that the First Order, they forced them their way in, you know, in a very sneaky way. And I think that's just very realistic, and it's, like, scary how many times that has happened.
Especially because, we'll kind of go through all the characters in a little more detail in a bit, but we get this beautiful story of Tamara, who is, you know, one more awesome part of the team, and we see her wind up basically signing on with the First Order in a way that, you know, I know the First Order are terrible and fascists, but I'm not able to hate her for it. I'm watching her fall in a way that's like, I hate that I understand why you would do this, and I can be sympathetic to your reasons.
Yeah, it's 100% reasonable. It's like, she's just trying to have a life, be a mechanic, and these pirates are a big, big issue for her. And the First Order comes in, and the pirates go away. And so she feels safer. Things are better for her. And she, you know, has this family around her. She has her boss, you know, this new kid, Kaz, that she's getting to know. Mm-hmm. Drives her crazy, but, you know, I like to think she enjoys him, you know?
Yeah.
And so just her, like, trust and appreciation of the First Order compounded on the fact that some people she was really close to lied to her, you know?
Right.
It doesn't, to her, it doesn't matter the reasoning. It doesn't matter what they're trying to do. I think what really pushes her over the edge is just, you lied to me.
Yeah. Yeah, and just to give people more of the story, if you haven't seen the first season, Kaz is our sort of main character. Much more of a main character than we've gotten in a Star Wars show for a while, in a way that at first I thought I would miss, but the family style, but I really enjoyed his character, and that the voice acting is fantastic by Christopher Sean. And he starts out as a pilot in the New Republic Navy. and an X-wing pilot. He meets up with Poe Dameron, and Poe sees him do some really fancy flying, and says, "Hey, you should actually like help me with this project." Because he is interested in the resistance. He's kind of bored in the New Republic Navy. And so he wants to join the resistance. And Poe says, "Great, I'm going to put you on this platform," which is kind of like it's like Daytona with the Daytona races. You know, it's like this independent thing that exists for starship racing, or well, within an atmosphere, but fancy flying and things like that. And he wants him there to pose as a mechanic while trying to learn if the First Order is coming in to take over this platform. And so most of the season is the hijinks of him trying to be a mechanic while every now and then doing some actual spy stuff. And as you said, it's towards the end that they realize that he has to admit he's been lying this whole time, and he is a resistance spy. And that part of why the crew that he's on, and we'll go through the characters in a bit, are all in such danger is because of him. And so that's all the more reason why Tam, I think, feels so betrayed by his lie, because now not only is she in danger in ways that make her want the First Order, it's specifically because of this guy having lied to her for so long.
Yeah. I do want to real quick clarify. When I said I was a post-Quill hater, I think...
You did not use the word hater, so I want to defend you. And I didn't mean to paint you as that.
Okay, cool. I want to clarify. Like, I really enjoyed the first two movies. Like, The Last Jedi mm-hmm. was really good. Had some great, like, the qualities that you've talked about, the deeper nuances and all that right. stuff. But, and The Force Awakens was just so fun. But I think why I look back on it with such, like, a sour taste in my mouth is because of the way we were let down by Rise of Skywalker. It didn't pay anything off. And also, you know, Force Awakens, there was the disappointment of, oh, there goes the New Republic. We spent a whole trilogy trying to form this, and now it's gone like that, mm-hmm. in a blink.
Yeah.
And so that's something I really appreciated about the Resistance, or Resistance,
right,
is the way it did kind of pay that off. Like, the Starkiller Base massacre, that's what I'm going to call it, has mm-hmm. never hit home for me. Like, I saw it and I was...
We'd never heard the word Hosnian Prime before Hosnian Prime got destroyed.
Exactly. It's like... We saw this one shot with lasers going out into the sky and planets exploding and some shocked faces, but we never saw someone who was actually affected personally by it. And so then when we have Kaz, this like fun-loving, really upbeat guy, he's like trying to do the right thing, but, you know, not trying to hurt anyone's feelings. He believes the best in everyone. And just to see him absolutely crushed by it.
Right.
Like, we know that...
Because part of what we learn is that his family is on Hosnian Prime. So for him, it's very personal.
Yeah, exactly. That's his, like, his dad was a senator in the New Republic, and we know the entire New Republic just got destroyed.
Right.
So there goes his family.
And one thing that I really got out of that, I'm not sure if one thing that really hit me hard about that was, for me, there's a real parallel to him, because he literally watches on view screens the destruction of Hosnian Prime. And it felt very similar to me to Leia watching the destruction of Alderaan, especially because some of his family members, you know, his found family, the crew on the ship, find him and comfort him. And, you know, there's kind of been a joke, but also with a lot of seriousness in terms of how, like, in the 70s, we treated women's emotions, that Leia has her entire world blown up. But then when Luke has the guy who he's known for about 3 days as his mentor die, Leia comforts Luke. Mm-hmm. But we never see much of, like, Leia being comforted about her planet being destroyed. And so, yeah, I don't know if it was intentionally a reference to that. But for me, those moments of Kaz watching that happen and being horrified, it made the destruction feel so much more real. But also it just felt like a really nice reference to the fact that this has happened before.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's go back and talk about some of the individual characters, because there really is a kind of fun little found family kind of thing that they have here, as well as some great side characters. Kaz is our hero. What do you feel about Kaz? Because he's a very different kind of hero than we often get.
Yeah. Kaz, at first, felt very reminiscent to, like, season one Ezra. Like, just running around the station, trying to avoid, you know, people that he's done wrong. Oh, I'll pay you back later. It's also kind of a Cassian thing. Like, oh, I'll pay you back later. Trying to talk his way out of everything. Getting a favor from someone else to go pay back someone else. Like, I just felt like I was seeing this the episode of Rebels where Ezra has to go find the whatever fruit that is.
Malora.
The Melu run. So I just loved, like, I feel like he has, I looked it up, the character is 20, but I feel like being a boy, a lot of times maturity takes a little while to catch up. So it's like he's trying to do this really important thing, but he's just, like, so excited about it that he keeps doing things wrong.
Yeah. I think that's really true. And Ezra's an interesting connection because you're right. In a lot of ways, they share that kind of youthful exuberance. But where Ezra is very, like, you know, he's very jaded and cynical and street smart.
Yeah.
Kaz is the exact opposite. And I mean, we realize we've never really gotten this kind of, like, son of privilege character in this way before, where he's just part of why he's doing all the running around is he's never really had real consequences in his life, you know? And now all of a sudden, if he screws up, this crew of people who don't have a senator father to bail them out can get in real trouble. And I just wanted to say a quick word about Christopher Shawn, the actor who's voice acting him, because I think he's really good and such a difference in the kind of character we're getting. He's a Japanese-American actor. Many people saw him on Hawaii Five-0, or they may have seen him on some soap opera stuff. He's also he wrote the book Padawan, which is one of my favorite books of the recent Star Wars books, which is really awesome. And it was really nice to get, like, a person of color perspective on that. I will just say, though, going a little bit obscure, if you're a Jane Austen fan and you've seen the Lizzie Bennet Diaries, which I think is one of the best retellings of Pride and Prejudice, he redefines romantic hero Himbo because he plays Bing Lee, who is the modern day equivalent for Bingley in the Pride and Prejudice story. And it is just, he is so good in it. He is so lovable. He's so pure. And so when I put together who that character was, it made me so happy because, yeah, that's who's voice acting Kaz. And Kaz is the kind of person who, if he wasn't incredibly charismatic, I would want to slap.
Yeah.
Because he is constantly overstepping what he's supposed to do and constantly letting down other people because he's doing the thing that he wants instead of realizing this thing has consequences for other people. But Shawn just makes him so likable in a way that you're like, you understand why everyone around him is like, oh God, I'm having to clean up your mess again, but it's worth it.
Yep. Like the episode where he lost not one, not two, but I believe it was three engines over the side of the Colossus. I was like, this kid's an idiot. Like, what is going on? Like, come on, you had one job. But you're right. Like, where that would be just annoying or like an overdone joke in another character, it just like makes sense for his personality. You know, like the child of privilege who's just doing his best, but doesn't understand consequences necessarily.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, I worked for a year in a Toyota service shop, like I'm not a mechanic myself, but like helping, you know, I was helping the administration for it. And if I had lost three engines, if I'd lost one engine, I would be fired and sued for the cost of that engine. So like everything you see around it is just really interesting. I also really appreciated, and in part this, it's funny, I've just been watching the early Young Justice show, which I don't know if you've seen. But it has something that animated shows in live action, especially animated shows of like superhero type stuff, had a lot, which is one of the teenage male characters being really horrible in how he's always flirting and coming on to all the women around him. But it's played as like, oh, but he's just silly. It's funny. You know, it's fine. And the fact that in this, like, yeah, it's clear that he gets a little stupid around pretty women. Which, you know, some of us still do 30 years later, by the way, people any genders, but whatever. But like the point being, but there isn't a romance plot. There's a number of young women who are potential flirtations for him. And there's a little bit of flirtation maybe somewhere, but like, don't get me wrong. I don't mind romance all the time, but I hate when it feels forced. And I love that they didn't give him a romantic plot with anyone. He just was around these other people.
Yeah. No, I appreciated that too. I feel like I didn't notice it until you just pointed it out because it wasn't lacking. Like there was no need for a romantic plot. It was so lacking that the one time that Toro was like, I know why you're here. Like, I understand why you came to see me. He's so clueless. He doesn't understand what she's saying.
Yeah.
She thinks he's into her.
Yeah, definitely. It felt much more realistic in that way. Mm-hmm. Of like, yeah, like people, you know, hormones are going doing their things, but still people just living their lives.
Yeah. Just an overall thought or thing that I loved about the show was the, similar to Andor, the lack of lightsabers in the Force.
Yes. Yes.
And I can't remember, but I think in Andor, the Force, is it mentioned or is it like alluded to at all?
I think there's one or two references to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, never a lightsaber. There's no Jedi ever anywhere. No Sith, no Inquisitors.
Exactly.
It's not a part of the world.
And in this show, it's the same thing. There's literally no mention of the Force. Like, I looked up on Wikipedia. That's the Wikipedia mm-hmm. for Star Wars. But I looked up Kaz and it said in like one of the character statements, like, oh, he doesn't like believe in the Force. And I was like,
right.
Oh, like, we haven't even seen that yet in the show because it just wasn't relevant. Like,
yeah. Yeah, you're right. And like, I kept waiting for him to, because I remember when I started Rebels, mm-hmm. I knew nothing about it. I was very excited about it, but I was a little disappointed when it turned out Ezra was Force sensitive and the show was going to be about Jedi, because I was like, no, this is a post-Order 66 show. This is a couple years before Yoda will say Luke is the only one. Oh, but wait, he has a sister. Never mind. And I love Rebels, don't get me wrong, but I wanted a show that was no Force users and that was about a different part of the galaxy. And you're right, Andor gave us that, and Resistance does as well. And it makes it's one more reason why I think I like Kaz so much as a character, because he's not a chosen one.
Mm-hmm.
There's a joke where he makes a joke to a very literal character that we'll talk about in a bit about how he's the greatest pilot in the galaxy, and he has to live it down because he's not. He's a very good pilot, and he gets better. And it's paid off in a great way, but he's not the greatest or the best. He's just a good guy with a good heart who wants to do well, who isn't a Jedi or who isn't a great pilot. He's just a guy.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the, because this was one area that I really loved, but also had a few issues. The very literal character I mentioned is an alien named Niku Vozo. And do you know what race he is? He looks familiar, but I don't think they ever identified what race he's from.
Yes, he's Nikto. So okay. That's the same race as Jedi Ima Gundi, if you remember him. He was in the Clone Wars. Mm-hmm. But they kind of have these little horns on their face. And what we've seen in the past is they're typically always brown skinned. But mm-hmm. that's why I didn't place Niku at first as a Nikto, because right. he has green skin. But I looked it up. They can have brown, green, or red skin. So,
right. Okay. Well, that's cool. And does everyone of his race have the same, like, take everything incredibly literally, or is that specific to him?
That is specific to him.
Okay. Because I thought that was a really – it's interesting how in more recent television, especially sci-fi and fantasy, as people become more and more aware of neurodivergence – we're aware that in some ways we've always had characters who are kind of stand in for neurodivergence, like mm-hmm. going back to Spock and then Data. And sometimes it's done in ways that feel like it's insulting neurodivergence. And sometimes it's ways that are really affirming too. And certainly, I mean, for myself, as someone who's neurodivergent, like I've found a lot of affirmation and seen that even going back to Spock and Data and all those. And I think often it's intentional. And I think Niku is very much supposed to be that character. He takes everything incredibly literally. He often causes problems because the way he takes things literally and he does things like, for example, with Kaz making a joke to him about being the greatest pilot. And then Niku just goes around the station telling everyone, hey, it's wonderful. The greatest pilot in the galaxy is here.
Mm-hmm.
And I found his character charming. And I felt the way that they all sort of welcomed him and accepted him and never really teased him about this really nice. But it also felt frustrating to me because the thing that never happens is they keep getting into trouble because he does it and they get frustrated with him, at least in the moment. But no one ever says to him, like, hey, here's the disconnect we're having. And I want you to understand, like, here's why it seems sometimes you do what you think is the right thing and we get mad at you. Like, no one ever tries to actually bridge the gap in a way that is not telling him he's bad and needs to be normal, but just kind of acknowledging, like, and trying to find better ways to communicate between the two of them. And I just found that a bit frustrating, because I feel like if you're going to have that character, then maybe try to have a little more of that dialogue. But I'm curious, what did you think of that character?
I really enjoyed Niku. I thought, yeah, it was really fun to have a character who is coded more neurodivergent. And I was appreciative that no one was, like, mean to him. You know, that was my fear. I was like,
yeah,
he can't keep his mouth shut. Like, he takes everything literally, you know, like, Kaz sees some stormtroopers. He's like, why is the First Order here? Niku's like, I'll go ask them. And walks over to the stormtroopers. My friend Kaz is wondering why you're here, you know? And it's just wonderfully enjoyable. But, yeah, it almost feels like having a lack of, like, a conversation between people trying to, like, help him understand or, like, help bridge the gap, like you said. I feel like...
Right.
I wonder if that's left out so they can continue to play the comedic side of him. Kind of just speaking his mind and not understanding things.
Right. Yeah, I think that's probably true. And I think that's... Resistance is by no means the only ones who do that, you know? And I think... For me, it's both, it is wonderful, and like you said, that those moments are often comedic, and the fact that, like, it doesn't go well when he asks the First Order why they're there, but there's never a moment where something really bad happens and it's Niku's fault. You know, like, it could have been very easy to have Niku be the one to reveal that Kaz is the spy, or to have him give some information that allows the First Order to, like, do really bad things. But the fact that you're right, there's no real consequences to it. I really enjoyed that, and I think you're right. It is that, like, well, we're gonna keep having him this way though, just because we're trying to laugh with him, but we do want to keep him as a comedic character instead of actually diving into this difference in communication.
Yeah. It's like a bit of a loss, but it's also I'm glad the character's there. I enjoy him, and
for sure,
he's definitely like the most loving and accepting person, I would say, in the show.
Yeah.
And it's especially shown in that episode when they find this stinky little animal and everyone's like, ew, disgusting. And Niku's like,
oh, yeah.
That's my bet. That's my best friend. He's my little buddy. Mm-hmm. Don't you dare say anything mean about him or I will quit and I will walk away.
Right. And it goes pretty deep there because what it turns out is that this little thing that he's loved is the baby of this huge sea monster that's attacking the platform and maybe going to destroy the platform. And while it gets to a point where you're sort of like, okay, are we sacrificing one for the good of like so many more, which is not a good thing, but I understand it. But even long before that, people are like, just throw it overboard. Like, we can kill that little thing. And a lot of them are like, why should we save it? Because it's ugly, because it's smelly and all of this stuff. And yeah, I love that he's the like, no, this is a living thing and it's beautiful and I love it. And no, I'm not. And it's only when he believes and he's the one who figures out that this mother is actually just there for not to eat its child, not to eat this creature, but to bring it back because it's his child, their child, that Nico's willing to go along with it.
Yeah.
So the next probably biggest character, at least one of them, is I want to call him Jaeger because that's how it's spelled. And it's clearly a reference to Jaeger, the American test pilot, who was broke the sound barrier and all that. But it's pronounced Jaeger or Jaeger. Jaeger, yeah. What do you think of his character? Because he's kind of like the gruff. He's the head of the mechanic shop. He knows what Kaz is really doing. He's not happy about it. What do you think about his character and their growth?
I liked him. I wasn't like sure about him at first. Like, he just kind of seemed... Yeah, just like the gruff character that's like, sure, whatever, you can hang around. Almost like the Greef Karga from like Mandalorian. Like similar to that. Just kind of like, you do what you do, but I still need to do what I need to do.
Right.
And what you do better not affect what I'm trying to do.
Right.
But the growth we got mid-season with the episode with his brother, I really enjoyed. Like it. Because we learned earlier in the season, Kaz finds pictures that he was in the rebellion against the Empire and then finds pictures of him with a wife and a child. And so they know Jaeger had a family and now he doesn't. And then later on, we find out it was due to, like, I think a racing accident. And it was kind of his brother's fault.
Right.
And
very much so.
So there's this huge rift between them. He wants nothing to do with his brother. His brother's feeling like guilty, trying to make amends, but he's still that, like, kind of that egotistical pilot. So he's having trouble communicating, like, how poorly he feels and, like, how much he wants to make amends.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it was nice seeing a softer side of Yeager because he's been so kind of rough around the edges. You know, he has a soft spot for Kaz, obviously. He's willing to help him out, keeps him around, even though he's kind of a fool. But yeah, it was nice to see something affect him more personally and see more of like who he used to be or the person that he is that he's protecting with all that gruffness.
He does very much go on a journey. And in a way, if Kaz is kind of like Ezra, I think he's kind of like Kanan in that Kanan, you know, and a lot of this happens before the movies in the Kanan book. But Kanan's the one who's very jaded from his time in the Clone Wars and has to, he doesn't want to teach Ezra. He doesn't want to be a Jedi again and has to very slowly kind of come back into that. And of course, by the end of the season, Yeager is not only he's willing to fly a ship and help fight against the First Order, but he does at the end acknowledge that Kaz is a very good pilot in a way that feels like a really nice payoff to all the stuff that started at the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also felt like, you know, we've talked a lot about how during Andor, we talked a lot about how race is quite different in Star Wars, but also is there. Yeager is dark skinned. He's black. And I'm just being a little careful with words because it's clear that the race means something very different in Star Wars. But I think it is very intentional there, especially with Kaz. Also, both the voice actor and the character, the way is drawn, looks what we would think of as Asian. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of diversity like that on the show. And I feel like especially for Yeager, it helps his character a lot, I think, and the voice actor is also black, because part of what I get a lot is that he is much more working class than Kaz is. You know, for him, it's not just like he wants this mechanic thing to happen because he wants to be this mechanic. It's like, no, this is how he puts food on the table. Yeah. This is how he pays the bills and makes his living. And he's really angry at the fact that Poe, by kind of saddling him with this, but then also Kaz, by constantly screwing up and not taking it seriously, is threatening to wreck his business. And as we kind of learn with the brother, like, this is all he has left in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Yeah, like, he definitely, I feel like, is in a broken era of his life. He's trying to rebuild, but also doesn't really have the passion or excitement to rebuild anything that's, like, personal to him. So he's just trying to, you know, pay the bills, have a business, interact with his employees as he needs. But it's nice to see him grow through the show to, like, instead of just always yelling at Kaz when he's late, which is always. He deserves to be yelled at about being late. But also, you know, giving him some slack. Like, oh, you should go work on this engine outside so that you can see the race. But Yeager's not going to say, go watch the race. He's going to say, I'll let you work on this outside. Right. And so he starts to soften up.
Keep going, sir.
Yeah, he starts to soften up. And then by the end of the show, he's seen, you know, the negative effects of the First Order, and he's grown to care about Kaz and care about his employees. He wants what's best for them. And so he's to the point where he's willing to take the fall for Kaz. He says, no, I'm the spy.
Right.
Like, I'm with the Resistance. When he told Poe, I want nothing to do with this. He can have a roof, but this isn't me. This is not what I want.
Right. It's not his fight.
Exactly. Exactly. So seeing kind of the growth and, like, why he exited the fight, you know, learning that backstory, but kind of seeing his willingness and, like, understanding that, like, yeah, it is time to, like, get back into it and see what I can do to help the world, kind of, or galaxy.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's a really powerful story. And I think in part, his connection with Tamara is also why, because Tamara's another one of the mechanics, and Tamara often feels like she's getting slighted because Kaz is here and Kaz can get away with murder and things like that. And he really is very careful with her and really helping her to be like, no, you're a very trusted part of this team. And I think when she goes to the First Order, part of why it's so devastating is that he really feels so, he's the one who, ones who feels so hurt by this. And I appreciate it. He doesn't act like he's betrayed or that he's angry with her as much as he's just really sad that like she because he understands that to her eyes, it's in part because Yeager let her down, because Yeager knew Kaz's secret this whole time.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like Yeager kind of feels some responsibility for her, like
mm-hmm.
wanting to be there and support her. Like, he sees how hardworking she is and how she's just trying to do, you know, the right thing as best she knows. And he wants to, like you said, kind of encourage her through what's happening with Kaz and how she doesn't understand, mm-hmm. like, why can he get away with murder, you know?
Right.
And I think it almost, I mean, I don't know, I'm not a parent, but it almost felt like parental, his relationship with her. And then when she goes, him just accepting that. And he says, like, no, she made her choice. Like, we asked.
I think that. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, we asked her back and she made her choice.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's really true. And I think it definitely, and in some ways I appreciate that they don't make it a bigger deal. Like, they don't have him say, like, you're like my replacement child, or mm-hmm. you're like a daughter to me. Because, yeah, he did lose his children. And I it just would feel wrong to do that. But there is that bond between the two of them. And yeah, it's heartbreaking, but it's him doing it, I think, also really helps to me emphasize, underline this idea of, yeah, good people can get sucked into these things and not realize. And even like saying good people can, I'm not saying that like there's lots of good people in the Empire. That absolutely not, you know, ACAB and all that. But like, I definitely feel that like she goes into this for the right reasons and she gets hoodwinked and fooled. And like, I wish that we had seen her reaction to the destruction of Hosnian Prime, because I do think that she it's not a big public thing at that point yet. I don't know if she knows that it's happened. And or did I miss something? We didn't see her react to it, did we?
I don't think so. I'm inclined to think that she doesn't know. I kind of feel that whoever that First Order kind of officer is that's like convincing her, caring for her, you know, like trying to bring her under mm-hmm. her wing and like recruit her, you know, I think they would have avoided her seeing that. To really get her to buy in.
I think it's probably very true. So what other characters we stood out for you wanted to mention?
I don't know what I think about this character, but the character of Commander Pike was just interesting. They took Captain mm-hmm. Phasma and made her gold. So it's just a gold version of Captain Phasma.
As far as I could tell, because Captain Phasma, voiced by Gwendolyn Christie, was in the first episode. Mm-hmm. And as far as I could tell, Commander Pike was just, we want Captain Phasma. We can't afford to get Gwendolyn Christie on all these episodes. So we're going to create a stand-in who then reports to Christie.
To Phasma, Yeah, that's 100% true. I just thought it was kind of funny. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, Walmart version Phasma.
Very much so. And it's part of why, and here, as I said, we have a time-honored tradition of not remembering names of characters. The female First Order agent who is kind of the leader towards the end and is the one who, like, basically recruits Tamara, I really liked her character in part because, unlike Pike, she's clearly lying through her teeth, but she comes across much more like, no, we're just here to help. We hate that you're going through all this chaos. And, oh, by the way, if we're going to help, you need to let us have a little more control and a little more control and a little more control. And she does a good job of paint. Like, you see her alternating between, like, the carrot and the stick in terms of getting Tam involved. And it's in some ways, it makes her a lot scarier than someone like Pike, because Pike is just rah, 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 I'm mad, I'm going to punish people, where she's convincing in some ways that are horrifying.
Yeah, she's cunning. She's very intelligent, and she knows how to get what she wants. That's how it comes off. Yeah. And to me, it just felt like her and Tam, it's just like an indoctrination into a cult, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's exactly how it felt to me. It's just like, oh, like, we can treat you better. We can give you things that are better, like, these people that lied to you, like, let's take you away from them, you know?
Yeah.
And that's, like, a big thing in cults, is removing someone from their, like, support system.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just think that was interesting.
Yeah, I think the cult's a perfect description. And it, in some ways, it fits very well coming so soon off Andor, where if you haven't seen Andor yet, I don't know what you're doing with your life. I'll try not to spoil it. It's fine. It might not be for some people, and that's legit. But in Andor, there are characters who we see become more and more in like a part of and believing in the Empire. And it feels like that same thing. One of my guests during Andor described it as like watching someone get radicalized into like being an incel or being at a QAnon. And yeah. I think this is very similar.
Yeah.
You know, the other character who to me was really kind of interesting and made me think a lot was Captain Doza and his daughter. Mm-hmm. Primarily Captain Doza. Captain Doza he's the head of this whole thing, which is a little curious that he's a captain because like, he's treating it like it's a ship, but it's also like a private money. So I don't know if he's the owner or if he's just the captain and there's some like far off owners or whatever.
Yeah.
Never really explained. That's fine. I'm one of the only ones who wants like the economics of the military of the galaxy. I don't understand how you have an entire economy based on heavy metal. Like there's no credit or paper money, but anyway, my diversion's over. But he's someone who he wants to run this community and keep it safe and keep it functional and keep it profitable. And he doesn't want trouble. But he also isn't a terrible person. And you see him like he's the one who is slowly giving up more control to the First Order. And you can see that he doesn't like it, but he's kind of reluctantly doing it. And we learn at some point that he was part of the Empire way back in the day and that he has a lot of regrets about that. But also he's not like living his life in guilt. He's just trying to go ahead with his life. And I just really liked his character because I think that's when we get stories about like huge civil wars, whether it's in like a city or a country or a planet or a galaxy, after the war's over, the people who are on both sides have to learn to live with each other again. And we don't often get that story. And, you know, as things like Andor are reminding us, like not everyone who's involved with the Empire is like, you know, 100% rah-rah fascism. They're often like, okay, it's fine, I guess, which to me is not great, to be very clear, but is still like watching the story, especially of Kaz learning this about him and seeing them have to get along and seeing his journey of starting to give into the First Order, but finally reaching a point of like, no, I can't do this anymore. And him kind of helping to lead the fight against them. I just really loved his arc and his story.
Yeah, I agree. I think what you said about like his time in the Empire is very true. Like he did it and looking back has regrets. Like he sees where the Empire was wrong. And I think that's why mm-hmm. he's so cautious about the First Order, why he holds on for so long, just letting the pirates attack, why he keeps pushing back. You know, Commander Pyre's like, okay, like you need to get back on back to us on this deal. Like we want you to sign these papers and we'll come move in. And Doza's like, okay, when are you going to move out? Pyre's like, we'll figure that out when we figure it out. Sign the papers, mm-hmm. let us know immediately. And Doza keeps trying to push it back and like push back this decision because I think he knows it's wrong. And he sees that the First Order is becoming the Empire and he doesn't want to be a part of it again. But he's also put in that rock and hard place position where it seems to be the only way to keep his station safe.
Right. And sometimes his daughter safe because she's a part of things. She's the one who we mentioned before who really sweet character, a little bit privileged and full of herself uh-huh. and just assumes, well, this young man is coming to find me. Of course he wants to flirt with me because why wouldn't he, uh-huh. you know? Like, I can imagine her having a very active social media presence.
In some great ways, yeah. You know?
The other two I wanted to bring up and get your thoughts on, and unfortunately, again, my lack of name memory, the two people who run the kind of shop that they pop up every like 4 or 5 episodes or so, including Kaz having to one time run the shop. Do you remember their names? I think it's Hype and Griff, those two. Anyway, if you've seen the show, you know who I'm talking about. They're portrayed as kind of two like grumbly mechanics who get along with each other, with some interesting stuff going on there. What'd you think of their characters?
I mean, I liked them. They felt like if you've seen Bad Batch, a lot like kind of like bar that the Bad Batch is functioning out of. Gruff, very like, oh, you have mm-hmm. to pay me somehow, you know, like, oh, you don't have money? I'm going to put all these parts back. Like, I don't mm-hmm. care. Like, I know we're buds, but like, you gotta, you know, as Kaz did, you have to work literally in our shop if you want mm-hmm. things from us.
Well, and so here's why I was asking, because I don't know if I'm definitely that person who wants to see queer characters everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
These two are not portrayed as being very romantic to each other. They're bickering in the way that could be like the guys from like Click and Clack, if those who know NPR. But they keep talking about like, okay, and then we just went to go visit your mother, mm-hmm. and we're going to go visit your parents now. And I was like, is this supposed to be old married couple bickering instead of like two old friends? Because just the way they reference going to visit their families, mm-hmm. I was like, is this Disney sneaking in some queer coding? I don't know. Did you see that at all? Or am I just seeing that because I want to see it?
No, they're very much in love. Okay. Like, I would agree with that. It just seemed like an old married couple, like, running a shop, you know. They disagree with each other. They fight with other people, you know. But mm-hmm. same thing, you know, like, they're going to see one of their mothers and have family dinner. And, you know, the other one's not necessarily thrilled about it because in-laws. So mm-hmm. I agree with that it was kind of, it seemed to be queer-coded to me, which is always lovely to see. And it's lovely when it's subtle, you know, it's not like hidden, but it's also not shoved in your face because it is just a normal part of the world.
Right. It doesn't define their characters in any way. Mm-hmm. And like, I would like to have it shoved in my face at least once in Star Wars, just to have like, you know, like can Vel and Cinta like kiss on the mouth, please, just once or twice, and give us some main characters. But yeah, I agree that also having it be so much more normalized of like, yeah, it's not a big deal to anyone. It's just these two aliens who are in love with each other and go to see each other's parents, mm-hmm. and who the hell knows what else is going on. Mm-hmm. You know, it was really nice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we've had a really great discussion about this. Is there any other characters or just storylines or plots in general that you wanted to bring up from the show?
Yeah. I wanted to bring up the character Sonara Saan.
Mm,
she is the pirate that Poe and Kaz rescue her on an abandoned space station that, like, something has gone wrong. Pirates tried to raid it, and then they accidentally let these dangerous animals out of the cage. And so they find Sonara, and she's unconscious, and they're like, oh, this must be someone who was working on this station before the pirates attack. Like, let's take her, get her medical attention, all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. They take her, bring her to the Colossus, get her fixed up, and she gets a job. But we find out that she is a pirate. You know, she wasn't a crew member. And she's still communicating with the lead pirate. Should have wrote down his name, but whatever. And I liked that, you know, at first she, like, was a pirate spy, you know, very much mm-hmm. doing things for the pirates, helping them, you know, finding the best times to attack the station, helping them break into the tower to try and kidnap Tora, Captain Doza's daughter. But I liked that she didn't have that full character turnaround where she turned her back on the pirates, said, I'm done with you guys, and decided to live mm-hmm. her life as a scavenger. When the pirates attacked the station, she did punch one of them in the face to try to keep her cover. But then later on, when the First Order is hunting her, the pirates are still the one who come and pick her up. Like, that's still kind of her found family. And I liked that the pirates weren't fully demonized, that it's like, yeah, they are kind of, they are their own family. They're a group of people who care about each other, who this is just their way of making their way through the world, which is, you know, illegal and not the best, but mm-hmm. just a simple man trying to make their way in the world.
They reminded me a lot of the pirates and other kind of scum and villainy types in Clone Wars, because at first you see them as working for the First Order, which I was a little disappointed by. But then, yeah, later, and in part because she doesn't like having to capture the daughter of the captain. And then, you know, throughout the show, she does become closer to Kaz. She does become closer to Yeager and the rest of them. And so then by the end, the pirates do show up to help fight the First Order.
Yeah.
And it felt very much kind of like a, you know, ever since Han Solo becomes part of the rebellion pretty darn quickly. Mm-hmm. But with characters especially like Hondo and Naka, who's my personal all-time fave, and some of the others, you've always had the sense of, like, the pirates are kind of doing their own thing, kind of like the Mandalorians. You know, sometimes they'll be on our side, sometimes they won't be. But seeing them be a lot more complicated, you're right. It would have been disappointing if she was just like, no, okay, this cause is so important, and the pirates are mean, and Kaz, you're so pretty that I'm going to join up with you all. And I like what you said. I think it makes a better story that that doesn't happen.
Yeah. Yeah, it didn't feel like an overplayed
trope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially because actually, I'll take back a little of what I said before. They do, her and Kaz do have some degree of flirtation, surely to the point that everyone else is teasing Kaz mm-hmm. about, like, you seem very interested in spending a lot of time with her.
Yeah.
But yeah, again, there, like, how many times have we seen the morally conflicted woman fall for a good man and thus decide to give it all up, mm-hmm. you know? And it's just kind of sexist and eye-rolly.
Yeah.
And it was really nice to not get that.
No, it was. I had written down here as one of my favorite scenes was, I don't remember what the situation was, but Kaz and Sonara were, I think, running from someone, and they get into this elevator. Mm-hmm. And it's just a shot of them standing in the elevator. Really, like, awkward elevator music playing. Sonara clears her mm-hmm. throat. Kaz is like, what? She's like, what? And then the door opens, and they start getting off. And then someone comes in, and they realize it's the wrong floor, and they turn around. They get back on. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that was a really funny and realistic way to show, like, tension.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, not overplay the romanticism. And without it being like, oh, these people are both clearly into each other. It's just like, no, there's just some tension there. You know, it's just a little awkward because maybe they recognize, like, Kaz obviously recognizes, oh, she's pretty, you know?
Right.
I'm not sure what she thinks of him, but it was just kind of a funny scene to me.
No, I think you're really right. Because, and again, you could really reduce her character so much by just saying, oh, she falls for him, and so that's why she changes. Mm-hmm. And it's not. Like, I think at the start, I think she's definitely flirting with him because she sees that it's a good way to get more information and to get more inside. Does she develop some actual feelings for him? Who knows? And maybe we'll see that paid off in season two, and maybe we won't. And I certainly didn't feel like it needed to be. I thought it was much better leaving it out.
Yeah. I feel like the thing that kind of changed Sonara, if she does have sort of a character change, although she doesn't leave the pirates, she does have a change of heart. And I think what really did that was Tam. It wasn't Kaz. It wasn't her falling in love or anything like that. But it was when the pirates attacked and Tam came to find her. Tam was like, oh, she's mm-hmm. in danger. That's my friend. I need to go get her. And Sonara was like, why did you come for me? Tam was like, right. Well, obviously I will. Yeah. And so I think that's kind of what makes her character change. And it's also, like, it's nice to see that in Tam, that, mm-hmm. like, she really does care about her friends. And I think that that goes into why the betrayal of Yeager and Kaz hurts so much and how that pushes her towards the First Order more.
Yeah, because in some ways, Tam is probably the most of the found family kind of aspect mm-hmm. of it in really powerful ways.
Yeah.
All right, so I've been kind of driving the conversation for a while, but I know you had a lot of thoughts. I'm going to kind of hand it over to you. What are some of the last things you wanted to touch on?
Yeah, I really liked, there was this one scene and quote specifically where it was, I think, just all the mechanics hanging out. They were having lunch and talking about the First Order. Kaz is like, why are they here? You know, they're everywhere. You can't do anything without them. And Tam is like, actually, I feel safer with them here on board. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the pirates are gone. Like, I don't see an issue. And Nico goes, I do feel a lot safer in a threatened by the military kind of way.
Yeah.
And I just thought, I was like, Niku calls it how it is. Like, he knows what's up. Like, that's exactly what it is. Like, you might feel safer, but it comes with a consequence.
Right. Yeah. And to me, again, that's one of those times where Star Wars feels so real. You know, I lived in New York City when Giuliani came into power. And yeah, it did feel, for me as a white person, it felt like there was less chance of me being mugged while walking around the city, which at me at 16 felt like a good thing. Mm-hmm. When then I later realized, like, how many of my freedoms, but more importantly, the freedoms of people who didn't look like me, were being restricted to make that happen. And that actually a lot of that sense of danger that I felt was a lot more forced and manufactured. I looked at it very differently. But yeah, I can get Niku's feeling of, like, on the surface, it does feel like you're safer now, but also with a much scarier thing looming over you and making you really get a question, like, what does safe mean in a situation like that?
Yeah, I think that was just, like, a really good way, because it is, Resistance is kind of geared towards kids, you know? It's more of a kid's show, and I think that that was just a good line to clarify it to the younger, like, mm-hmm. audience and help them, like, understand the different sides of it.
Exactly.
Other than that, I just wanted to bring up Poe, because I loved Poe in Force Awakens. Mm-hmm. And then felt like, I mean, I'm going to be honest, I haven't seen The Last Jedi or Rise of Skywalker very much. I think only mm-hmm. once each, but I felt like Poe, he definitely went through like a character arc in the post-schools. You know, there was that situation yeah. where he did something wrong and Leia coached him and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But I kind of liked to see where he came from, like the height of Poe being, you know, the poster boy of the resistance, him in all his right. like egotistical glory, but still, you know, he's fighting for the right thing and all that. So I kind of liked seeing like Poe at his height almost before mm-hmm. he falls and has to learn.
Right. Yeah. It felt like we were told, but never really shown. Like we see him being that super egotistical flyboy at the start of Last Jedi. But yeah, we don't really see too much of just like how much he was this figure that everyone else looked up to, mm-hmm. you know? And I think in some ways, knowing that helps me better understand why so many people followed him when he tried his kind of like takeover of power in Last Jedi.
Yeah.
As well as it was fun to see him be a mentor
yeah.
to Kaz in a lot of ways.
Yeah, that was fun. I also appreciated seeing just a bit more of General Organa.
Yeah, me too. And obviously, Carrie Fisher had passed away by this time. She was voiced by two women named Rachel Butera and Carolyn Hennessy. And I thought they used her sparingly enough, and those actresses were close enough that it didn't feel like, oh, this is the wrong person. You know, it yeah. definitely felt like, especially because when Kaz first, like, you know, connects with her and hears orders from her, you can see that he really holds her with so much reverence, with so much, you know, high esteem, that it was really powerful.
Yeah, it was. It was. I'm going to be honest. I kind of thought that they had used sound clips from Carrie Fisher. Like, the voice acting was so good. Like, I saw her on screen and I kind of like got chills. I was like, Space Mom, she's back. Yeah. Like, we get to see her being like Space Grandma to Kaz because he's just so much younger and has so much to learn. So yeah, I appreciated her inclusion in the show, seeing more of like her relationship with Poe.
Yeah.
Before.
Yeah. Seeing how much she did trust him and she did like they did respect each other, and that it makes that breach then so much more powerful. Mm-hmm. The last thing I'll just say about that also with Poe, and this is a hard moment, but it feels right, is all the stuff that's happening on the platform, as we said, is happening literally as The Force Awakens is happening. And so there's this really powerful moment where together, Kaz and Poe go on kind of a research mission that lets them realize what Jedi Starkiller Base is about, and like what that something really, really bad is about to happen. At which point Kaz is like, okay, well, you put me in this situation. Now we really need your help. And Poe has to say, I'm sorry, I can't. Because I have to go back and, you know, help fight in The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
Because that's what sets him on the mission to go and help try to find the stuff to, you know, find Luke Skywalker, which is where we wind up at the start of The Force Awakens. And it was heartbreaking because you want, especially in more of a kid's thing, you want to feel like the heroes are always going to come and rescue everybody who needs to. Mm-hmm. But like the people on this platform wind up kind of being on their own. And you see Kaz having some sense of being let down that Poe can't just turn around and come save him. And it was hard to watch, but it felt really real. And I thought it was really well done.
Yeah. That was definitely a good part of it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you so much, Aaron. This has been awesome. You were on pretty recently, so people may remember you, but for who hasn't, I know your TikTok and stuff, your cosplay is really taken off. So tell people a little bit more about what you do outside of this and where they can find you.
Yeah, what I do outside of this Star Wars-wise is mainly cosplay. I have a TikTok and an Instagram at lady.tano.creates, both on TikTok and Instagram. I kind of just like to document things as I'm doing them. I made my own Leku, which is the headdress for Ahsoka. That's who I cosplay as, mm-hmm. Ahsoka. So I documented the whole process of me making that, and I've been documenting just like figuring out how the makeup works, as well as doing some fun like Christmas themed photos and stuff like that. So yeah, so if you want to come along my cosplay journey, see what I'm doing there, as well as every once in a while just a other funny video about Star Wars, go ahead and give me a follow.
Yeah, definitely. It's very worth checking out. that's how we actually kind of connected, was I found your TikToks and really enjoyed them. I'll have those in the show notes. And of course, you can find all the stuff that we do on this podcast and my others under theethicalpanda.com. A lot of great stuff going on there. If you go to that website, most importantly, you'll find the ways to contact us and give us feedback. We just did an episode of feedback. We have some more coming up. Please check that out. We'd love to hear what you thought. What did you think of Resistance? Or what did you think of our description? If you haven't seen it, let us know. You can find us on Facebook, on Twitter, email. Generally, the best way to send in feedback is sending it to Matthew@theethicalpanda.com. But you can also find us on Twitter, any of those places. We'd love to hear your thoughts and feedback. So on behalf of myself, Aaron, thank you all so much for listening, and have a good day.